have Arne Keeling from Memorial University doing the mining. So Arne.
Thanks very much, James. Thanks, everyone, for having me here. This is learning a lot and really enjoying the interchange between academics, people from communities, people in social services, social economy organizations. So it's a very stimulating, kind of different sort of conference for me as an academic. I am a geographer, historical geographer, interested in environmental change and community change, driven by large-scale natural resource developments in northern communities. And so what I want to do today is talk a little bit about a larger project within which a sub-project grant was given to us by the Social Economy Research Network to look at some kind of social economic dimensions of this larger question of the historical examples of major mega project development in the North, and what some of the lessons we can take from that are, what the experiences of people were during those periods, and then what some of the lessons for today and for some of the debates that have already been referenced here in terms of large-scale mineral development, petroleum development, et cetera, in the North. The work has been done by myself and in the field by a master's student, again funded through CERNOCA, Jean-Sébastien Boutet. So we're going to talk today about, I'm going to talk today about our work together in understanding Aboriginal perspectives on the historical and contemporary mineral resource developments around Shepherdville, Quebec. So, click. Thanks. The larger context for this project is a SHRC-funded project that was, we received funding last year as well. As with the CERNICA grant, from the Northern Communities Special Call from the Social Sciences and Humanities Research Council. So again, it just shows that many of the funding bodies are driving increased amounts of social scientific research in the North. So this is a three-year fund from Social Sciences and Humanities Research Council and CERNICA. There are actually six investigators we have looking at a series of case studies across the Canadian subarctic of historical mineral development and some of a variety of dimensions on the social, economic, and environmental impacts of those developments. The case studies of the different regions and mines include the Keno Hill Mine in the Yukon, Giant and Con in Yellowknife, the Pine Point Mine in the Northwest Territories, the Port Radium Mine, which someone, I think Frances, mentioned her work in with Deborah Simmons in Delaunay, and she's working with us on that, on the Port Radium Mine. And most salient to today's discussion is the Quebec-Labrador iron mining region. So, thank you. So again, some of the general context for this research is that we're interested in looking at the entire life cycle of large-scale mining development, including some of the after effects, because even once mines close, their impacts continue to be felt in terms of the economic devastation that's often left behind, and the problems of environmental contamination and the long-term disruption of things like traditional activities on the land. There are an estimated 10,000 orphaned and abandoned mines in Canada, many of which are in the provincial norths and the territorial north, many of which have not undergone any sort of environmental remediation or even assessments of the kinds of physical and chemical hazards that they present in the landscape. So this is quite a widespread problem. Mining has traditionally been associated in the North with regional economic dependency and instability, some of the boom-bust cycle problems that Brenda Carley mentioned earlier in her talk. Along with that have been large-scale environmental disruptions, degradation, and changes associated not only with the immediate mineral development itself, but often with things like infrastructure development, town development, roads, railways, hydroelectric projects, etc., associated with large-scale mineral extraction that really make these have made these mega projects. And so you can't necessarily just look at the immediate impacts of the mine itself, but rather the whole suite of development impacts and problems that have been associated with that. And oh, I suddenly got louder. I may have been pointing it correctly now. And of course, in particular in the North, this has affected First Nations communities and Métis communities in a variety of very specific ways, in part related to, again, some of the things that Francis was talking about earlier with the government's desire to bring industrial development to the North to actively transform that traditional economy and then some of the unforeseen consequences of the attempts to try and do so. So click again, please. The larger goals, then, of this project have been to investigate the impacts of mineral development in these historical situations, and to analyze whether the historical siting of these abandoned mines near indigenous communities can be interpreted and understood through a variety of different frameworks, including environmental justice and political ecology, but also the social economy and the taking into account, again, impacts on traditional activities. And finally, to assess the economic and social consequences of mine closure and abandonment for communities. And this raises issues such as capital flight, job losses, community collapse, and again, the long-term disruption of traditional economies, both because of the economic changes launched by mineral development, but also because of the environmental consequences of those activities as well. Thank you. So in the particular case that I want to talk about today, I'm talking about the Quebec-Labrador iron mining region, where the Iron Ore Company of Canada operated a major mine between 1954 and 1982. The indigenous communities primarily affected by this were the Niskapi Nation of Kawabachikamak and the Innu families, who both of which were relocated from different areas in Quebec to the Schepperville area, possibly because the government, we're still trying to piece this together, foresaw opportunities for them to become that waged labor force at the mine. And in fact, Aboriginal families did engage in wage employment with IOC, and many of the members of this of these Aboriginal communities adopted some aspects of what we're talking about today in terms of the mixed economy. So there's still subsistence activities, traditional activities that are going on, intermixed with sometimes seasonal, sometimes permanent employment associated with the mine. But then, of course, these, as so often happens with major mines, it's a finite resource or economic changes associated with distant markets result in the closure of this mine. It brought a virtual collapse of the community itself at Schepperville, and of course, the relocation of many of the sojourner southern labor force out of the community, leaving behind the indigenous communities themselves. So we're interested in talking to communities about the impacts of the closure itself. So again, looking at that period of the development and the kinds of changes that were going on within traditional lifestyles associated with the coming of the mine, and then trying to assess and get people's experiences of the impact of the mine closure itself, as well as, and I'll show you this shortly, some of the debates and discussions around redevelopment of mining in the region that are going on right now. Please. So overall, the goal then is to document community experiences of industrial development and decline and the emergence of this mixed economy during really what was a key transitional phase in northern history, this period of where both federal and provincial governments were pursuing aggressive northern industrial development policies. Click, please. So some of the specific research questions that have guided, in particular, the efforts of Jean-Sébastien in his interviews in the field with some of the families in the area. How did the mine development and subsequent closure, affect the regional Aboriginal populations? Again, here, looking at those mining-induced social, economic, and environmental changes. And how is the Aboriginal economy, including social economy practices such as subsistence sharing and the transmission of traditional knowledges, affected by engagement with wage labor and then, in turn, the sudden loss of waged employment? And finally, how have these experiences and the persistence, as we have found, of social economy practices in the community affected the perceptions of contemporary mine redevelopment in the region? So we're in the process, as was the case with Thierry's presentation, and I think some of the others, of analyzing some of the information that we've gotten both out of archival sources and through talking to people in the communities. So these are very preliminary kind of impressions that we're offering at the moment. We've collected some oral histories of both elders and youths reflecting on this experience of mining labor and of community economic and landscape changes. We, of course, as I say, have collected archival documents looking at government policies and company policies associated with the employment of Aboriginal people at this mine. And we're hoping at the end of this project to be able to share back with the community some of the documentation of community memories and experiences of the mining period, which everyone in the community agrees was an absolutely transformational period for this region. We hope to come to some assessment through this research of the impacts and perceptions of industrial development on traditional activities such as hunting, resource sharing, and knowledge transmission. And finally, to explore the contemporary manifestations of this mixed economy in the context of thinking about what contemporary mine developments might pose for the region. Those contemporary mine developments I just very quickly outlined here. We have, interestingly, we have Aboriginal private sector joint venture mining proposals on the table for the Shepherdville side of the border here. We have the Quebec side of the border here. There's also some developments on the Labrador side of the border. This is a whole iron mining trough which runs down in the kind of southeastern trend in the Quebec-Labrador, western Labrador region. So there are active negotiations ongoing of impact benefit agreements and joint venture mining activities that are on the table right now, although with the downturn in commodities markets, that kind of cooled off a little bit in the last year. And again, here we see that there's opportunities for wage employment and development, which again I put in scare quotes, much in the way that I think Francis kind of footnoted this question about, you know, why is development always considered, you know, this type of development as the necessary goal for any given region or any given population to aspire to. But also, there are concerns being expressed by the community for what the impacts of this redevelopment are going to be for Aboriginal cultural heritage and traditional economies. Click again, please. In this regard, we have actually, through the field work and through some connections with the Niskapi Nation in particular, we have formed yet another partnership that this research has led to, the Canadian Business Ethics Research Network, which is working directly with the Niskapi Nation of Kawawa Chikamak to look at some of the ethical questions surrounding natural resource development in resource-dependent regions and working with Aboriginal communities. And this is one of their case study areas. So they're very keen on finding out or getting some information on what the historical experience and the perceptions of that experience feed into contemporary reactions and debates within the communities around, well, what should we do with natural resource development? And again, our contact information is here. As I say, a lot of credit goes to the master's student, Jean-Sébastien Boutet, who was spent a good amount of time in the community, in the field, doing oral history research with Niskapi and Innu people. Others of us involved on this project at Memorial University are myself there, and a historian, Dr. John Sandlas. You can find out more about the larger project that this study forms a part of at this website. It's hosted by the Network in Canadian History and Environment. We've got a lot of information about our case studies and our activities in these various communities there. So it's nichecanada.org/mining. And I'm happy to take a question or two if we do have time for that.